you know, one of the things we always kind of strikes home to me when I see these, all of this landscape, of course, is kind of formed by man, not of course the hills and so on, but what we're seeing. So we'd have been here at one time and this would have been very much more wooded, you know, there would have been woodland all over. And of course, you know, humans have created it into sort of to suit their own really. And this is an example of kind of the industrial past, which you know, these are all millstones. People had come out on the moorland here, they'd chip them out of boulders, and they were used in the grain, in the flour, the grain sort of industry. So they'd have a pair, that one would run on top of the other. They'd feed the grain in through the centre, and it'd get smashed between the two plates.
Okay. Yeah.
And what came out was then obviously used to make bread. So this is a big part of the history here, and literally, here's an example, but across the Peak District there were, I hazard thousands of these just left scattered here, really.
So there would have been we're underneath, this is the beginning of Stanage Edge, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So to me, we look like this is like a, I know it's a climbing mecca, but like just a, you know, a rock wall and a steep slope down to, but down to like a flat, you know, flat plateau.
Yeah.
So we're on a steep slope. There would have been a mill right here.
No, not a mill. No, it would literally have been the stonemasons out on the moorland here.
Ah, okay.
Chipping these things out.
Okay.
So they'd find, there's different things in the Peak District. Some areas are like this where I guess they'd have just used suitable size boulders and things,
okay,
like that. But some parts of the Peak District, they actually actively sort of quarried the rock.
Right.
So they'd drill boreholes in and they'd place explosive and they'd break sheets of rock off. But yeah, they'd work up here, and then what I understand happened was when they'd got a pair, you know, they'd use some sort of long pole through them or something, get a load of people on there, and they'd roll it down the hillside.
Best, most dangerous game of roly-poly ever.
Hi, I'm Cormac.
And I'm Josh.
Welcome to The Living Project.
Be true, live wild.
At The Living Project, when we're not podcasting, we host powerful journeys with the wild. We're passionate about the wild within and the wild without. So check us out at www.thelivingproject.life and join us on an immersive journey to reflect, refresh, and reconnect with yourself, with others, and with the wild. To stop, strip back, and write your own story. To be true, live wild.
Our podcast is a place designed to share people's stories and their relationship with the wild within and the wild without, their individual journeys. We believe human beings are a part of the wild, and when we connect with the self-willed elements of water, earth, fire and air, we are healthier and better able to connect with others and the planet in its wholeness. We hope you enjoy hearing from others willing to share and are inspired in your own wild journey.
Hello, and welcome to episode 35. Today, we're joined by mountaineering environmentalist Paul Lewis. We recorded this conversation in Dave the Wild Bus, just after Paul took us for a little yomp in his local wild, the Peak District National Park, specifically Stanage Edge and Robin Hood's Caves. So who is Paul? Paul lives with his family in the Peak District, where he runs his own outdoor business, Peak Mountaineering. An outdoor enthusiast and lifelong adventurer, Paul's been rock climbing since he was a teenager, both in the peaks and further afield. Unsurprisingly, the climbing bug led him on a different journey of education, and his graduation came when he achieved his Winter Mountaineering and Climbing Instructor Award. They are no mean feat. Paul's a fellow of the Royal Geographical Society and a leading practitioner of the Institute of Outdoor Learning.
In this episode, we hear that Paul, above all, describes himself as a teacher and an educator, and that wild places are his classroom. Both Josh and I have worked with Paul and can testify to his passion for supporting and mentoring other aspiring professionals, as well as young people and adults, on their wild adventures. In our conversation with this special, thoughtful human, we were inspired to hear about his crucial life learnings found in wild places. His organisation of annual litter picks in the Peak District and his deep care and commitment to look after the environment that has given him so much.
We were honoured to share time and conversation with Paul up in the Peaks. Enjoy the chat.
So cool. We're sat in Dave the Wild Bus. He's called a wild bus. He's a shitty old camper van, but he's magic. In the Peak District, we're near Stanage Edge, and we're joined by Paul Lewis, who is a native of the Peak District. And our view while we're recording this is right out over kind of the Peak District. We've got kind of rocky tops and tors and wooded valleys, and even a limestone factory making cement, which is quite cool. It's a special view from the window. It's our first time recording in the bus, and we're really excited. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Thank you.
Let's crack straight into the big question, because we've been out with you this afternoon into your wild, and we're going to chat about that a bit more. But let's first of all get into this concept of wild and kind of why the three of us have shared some of these wild times over the years. Like, what does that word wild mean to you? The concept of wild, or the word wild, what does it mean to you?
I guess if it's okay, I'll just wrap that up in history really for myself, which is, I was from a very traditional family where I didn't have access to wild places really. My family were very much preferred urban environments, and was driven more into sort of team sports, traditional sports really. And when I was about 13, I was dragged by a few friends along to the local scout group, and by lucky chance on the first sort of evening, we just didn't realise that was going to happen, but they were going climbing, rock climbing. So we went to a local crag in the Peak District, and it just was a massive eye-opener for me, which is, I saw this completely different, these different opportunities through sport, but also just being in these different environments. And that was probably the spark for me. And so, of my kind of experience with the wild in that sense, as I sort of started to interpret it. And so I would say, if you ask me that question, you know, it is these places, it's our natural environments, but it's also about the opportunities it offers. Both to me and now through the things I do, being able to share that with other people. So I guess that's it really. That's it's that whole package. If that explains.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So the way that we feel about the wild, the way we've come to our understanding of the wild is, I suppose, is a simple, what we feel is a simple explanation of quite a complex human and natural thing. Is we describe the wild as the self-willed, both within and without, and so the self-willed of the natural world of trees growing, rivers flowing, rocks forming, oceans storming, creating waves, the self-willed elements that, regardless of human impact, behaviors might change and landscapes might change, but things still grow and live and adapt, and there is self-will in that. It's the wild, the uncontrolled, and the self-willed within us, like the ability to access our wild selves, to really find that self-will to explore potentially the unknowns, that first time you were going to the crag, and that was potentially, you were brought to that, and then from that self-will, that engagement with something came about. So that's how we think of the wild. What do you think of that that kind of encapsulation of the concept of wild?
Yeah, I think I largely agree with that. I think the truth is that everybody brings their own interpretation, don't they?
Yeah.
But by and large, I'd agree with that. There's this, for me, it is about the natural world, but it's everybody's perspective on how we interact with that is very different. Mm. So, and I see that a lot in my working life now, really, which is you can bring a group to one place and you can be looking on a particular view, or you can be interacting in some way, and everybody's interpretation of that will be very different.
Yeah.
But no, I would, you know, definitely by and large agree with what you said. That would be my interpretation too.
Yeah, and that idea of engaging with it, like yourself, like, you know, so everyone sat there, you're in the same place, but that self exploration, the experience is entirely unique to to you, isn't it?
Yeah. Definitely,
Paul, you mentioned there that you first had this experience of the wild within you and sort of externally to you when you went to Scouts, and then you ended up going to do some rock climbing in the Peak District, and you now live in the Peak District, and you've just taken us on a little walk, and you're so knowledgeable and passionate about this area. So I'm really interested, you know, within that definition we gave of the wild, and that you kind of added to, is what can you take, you know, that moment when as a young person you went into that wild and it clearly connected with you, but do you have a sense, and you've moved here, so like it did have a massive impact on you, but do you have a sense of what that impact was? What was it about that experience and connection with this Peak District, this beautiful wilderness, that that resonated with you, that transformed your life essentially?
I think probably the key memory of that really was of the freedom it offered me. As I said, in my life before then, I'd had a, you know, lovely upbringing with very caring parents, but by and large quite structured, and I was structured through activities and sport and so on, very much sort of those team focused. And I think climbing itself is very much a team sport, but it's very much about individual challenge. And so that was one element, and then also being able to do that in these places that had this sense of freedom as well. So I guess my overriding sense from all of that is it was freedom, really. It was freedom, and that's probably what I've sought ever since. Whether it's coming to live in a place that offers those freedoms, whether it's the way I live my life from a work perspective and my relationships with people, I think the wild places for me have brought that freedom, really. So I don't remember a particular, it wasn't that I could pick an individual moment, but it very much was, it was almost like, it was like a kind of a classic light bulb moment, you know, once I'd tasted that, then all of these other things that had formed my life before became irrelevant, if you like, and that became my new passion through climbing. But climbing, of course, just was a vehicle to go and explore these sort of areas more and more, and then, you know, other parts around the UK and around the world. But it was probably freedom would be the word I'd pick. It was that opportunity.
So you felt that sense of freedom, and you've sought it and engaged with that sense, that feeling ever since. Are there other feelings when you think about your relationship with the wild? Are there other feelings that it conjures up, that the wild provides you with, or you feel that you have some symbiotic connection with, or, you know, what is this relationship with the wild? What do you think your relationship is with these wild places?
I think lots of what we do, how we develop as people, it comes through our exposure to things, doesn't it? And the way we use those exposures to educate ourselves and so on. So I guess the answer to that question, maybe, hopefully answers anyway, is that the more I began to understand the way we as humans interact with places and about the places I was in, then it gave me a better understanding of how symbiotic that relationship is, isn't it? I need these places, but then again, the way I interact with these places has a massive impact as well. So I guess that's at a personal level for sure, but also then in the ways I've been trying, as I've lived my life, to broaden other people's understanding of that as well. So I guess the key thing for me was, hopefully that ties it together. It was kind of the big classroom, really, you know, in that sense.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about that concept of classroom learning. Like, we know you're passionate about, and we've spent time on your courses and been involved in your passion for the environment and for the places that we go. And you provide loads of learning in that space. I'd like to go, if it's okay, to some of your learning, maybe. And very often, people who've had a strong relationship with the wild, like you, have, because it's, you know, it's an emotional experience, and it's often involving things like climbing and mountaineering. And you've mountaineered and climbed all over the world, you know, not only the Peak District. And not only the UK, and you also lived a human life, which has challenges. And very often, you know, we seem to find that people who have relationships and connections with the wild has often provided them with some pretty hefty challenges and hefty learning in life, as well as or providing them with some healing, some safety, some sanctuary from life's challenges. Or with life's challenges. So I'm wondering if you've had, you know, I'm sure you've had some challenges that you've faced in life, either in the wild or in general, that the wild has played a role in. Like, has it played a, you know, have you found that? Has the wild played a role in your challenges and either caused challenge and or part of the healing from those challenges?
Mm. I think from that first point I described, you know, my entry point through the Scouts, really, then that's was a sort of starting point, really, for this long-term relationship. And but as I said, really, my relationship with the wild is also linked to my passion for climbing, and so inevitably that takes you to places that can be quite harsh, you know, can be quite dangerous, and also where you definitely, you know, you get this sense of our insignificance when you're among big mountain areas and so on and so on. And so definitely I think both sides to what you've said are key. One is that I've run to these wild places many times, you know, at difficult points in my life when I've had some sort of personal struggles or tragedy, but also it has also provided some very challenging times as well. I've lost friends through climbing, and I've been involved in some incidents as well. So I guess it's sort of both, really, in the sense that it's helped me many times, but also it's I have had periods in my life where I've found myself needing to escape from it as well, in the sense not just getting out of a tricky situation, but in fact that it's become overwhelming. Mm. So there's sort of both sides to that. But I guess even when that's happened, it's still come round to, after a little period of perhaps time away or healing in some form, I've come back to needing it in my life again. So I kind of know now, I suppose, as you've lived life longer, that I'll always be drawn to it. It will always be a big part, but there'll be times along that journey where I'm more involved with it, maybe in times where I'm deliberately keeping a distance.
Yeah.
So there's probably both elements to it.
Yeah, it's like any, it's funny that we think we're separate, but you talk about it as a long-term relationship, and yeah, actually, like, it kind of almost shows, doesn't it, right? Like, we have these human relationships that go through heartbreak and healing and all these things, and actually our relationship with Mother Earth, or, you know, we make nature human sometimes, don't we, with that Mother Earth or whatever, is a similar thing. There's heartbreak and healing, and it feels like a natural journey.
Mm. Yeah, I'm really interested in this idea of the wild and your need to go into harsh environments and to take risks.
by being in the wild and connecting with the rocks, and you know, and by doing that, we know that the wild, in that sense, is untamed. It's not something that you can control. So you have to, as a human being, you have to let go. You have to work within that, don't you? And you have to let go of some control. And sometimes it's benign, and it's lovely, and it's wonderful. We all want to be in that kind of wild. But sometimes it's not benign, as you've hinted at. And I'm wondering if some lessons for you, what your lessons and what you've learned as a human being from being in those non-benign wild spaces, and whether or not you think there's any merit in that space for humanity in general, you know. So, like, you know, when the wild decides to do its thing and it wants to spin you around and spit you out and really challenge you, you've stepped out of your boundaries over the edge and you've found something new, but hopefully you've come, well, you obviously have come, step back and come back. It must have an impact, and I'm wondering what lessons you've learned about yourself as a human being first, and secondly, whether you think there's any more generic lessons for us as humanity with our connection with the wild, because we know at this moment in our human history we're massively challenged.
Personally, I've always felt the need to challenge myself, you know, whether that's physically or mentally, by seeking out challenging experiences. And it's interesting, I often find it interesting when you go to mountain communities where you've got people who live at the base of big mountains, and you talk to them and they're like, yep, you know, I've never had any interest to go to the top of that mountain. I'm happy where I live, I'm happy being in that environment. They just don't feel that need. Whereas then you've got another group of people who will see a mountain or rock climb, whatever it is, and think, you know, I have to tackle that, I have to conquer that. So I've often pondered on that sort of need to go into, to sort of take that additional risk, when you're largely in the same environment, but some people are just accepting a much, or seeking out a much lower level of risk. And it's a hard one, because of course anything climbing, mountaineering, you know, inherently, you could argue, pointless activities, you know, on a global scale anyway. But as a personal, on a personal level, I think there's a lot to be gained from pushing yourself physically, and of course all of those challenges are mental as well. But what you actually gain from that probably is really difficult to describe, isn't it, in some sort of closed answer to a question, because and often what you gain from it isn't something you're immediately aware of. You know, you may have that initial euphoria because you got to the top of that mountain you wanted to climb, but often those, the main learning points from that will just be things that become apparent, you know, often months, even years later. It's not that you can give a checklist of this is what I got You know, actually, but
here's course, the outcomes you will see from this harsh training.
Exactly, yeah.
37% more resilience.
but so I'm not sure I've exactly answered your question there, but I think that's how I would see it. I mean, I don't know why I see a mountain and I want to climb it. I see a rock climb and I want to climb it. I'm aware I love the movement over rock, and I love getting that view from the top of the mountain. I love the physical challenge, and I love pushing myself sort of mentally and physically. But beyond that, why I feel that need, and the person next to me is quite happy just to sit on the patio and drink a cup of coffee looking out at that view, it's really hard to pin that down.
But I liked your analogy with, obviously there's a cultural difference, isn't there, between largely, in the past, largely Westerners going out to conquer the world and climb mountains, and the local communities going, okay, well, we don't do that. Why do you want to do that? But nevertheless, you must find when you visit those communities, you're going out, I'm sure, because one reason I go out there, I don't know about you, you, Josh, is it, there is the physical element of climbing something and doing something challenging, but it's also being out in this wilderness and feeling the sense of awe or joy and putting ourselves in perspective as a human being. And I feel that some of those things are equally valuable, and maybe the local communities, they live in those, they're still harsh environments. It's hard for them to live and survive in some of those places up in Nepal and Bhutan and places like that that I've been to. But yet, they live more harmoniously, don't they, in their environment. And we often are as inspired by those communities as we are by the mountain physical environment itself.
Mm.
And I think I've come back richer from seeing that and experiencing that, and I think it's made me feel more connected to nature or to the environment, and think about my impact on those things that in a way that I might have not done before.
Mm.
You've travelled far and wide, and with young people as well. Do you think there's merit in that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think the it's interesting how your relationship with that changes over time as well, doesn't it? Definitely when I was younger, it was probably far more at that point about the pushing myself physically, seeking out these more, at the end of the day, more dangerous challenges. But actually, as time's gone on, I've got a bit older, to be honest, as much about being in those places now is about interacting with the place, with the people, with the culture, and you know, less, although I do still like a challenge, mm-hmm. you know, less about that. So it's interesting, you chart a life, and it, of course, it changes over time. It's not a linear journey, is it? But yeah, absolutely. And I think you can learn so much from being in those sorts of places where people have, they just seem to have developed this ability to live in pretty good harmony with the natural environment. And of course, for a lot of us, we've become far more removed from that.
Yeah.
We buy our food in the supermarket, we jump, you know, in our cars and so on and so on, and yet you still can go to these communities where they're still growing their own crops, they're, you know, developing their own buildings, you know, and they seem to be able to still live a very rich and fulfilling life. In fact, I often think possibly even more fulfilling once you can cut away all that sort of fluff that we all kind of wrap our lives in nowadays. So nowadays for me, it's as much about seeking lessons from the people as I think you're describing,
yeah.
really.
Mm.
I'm going to be a bit naughty because I'd like to just go back, because we went to what you get from when you do that climb or you summit that mountain. And what Cormac asked, and I would like to hear, is that when nature spits you out and you don't hit that summit, or the weather the weather changes and you, the self-willed wild says, nah, it ain't your fucking day, son. I'll have to put an explicit warning on the podcast now, or something along those lines.
Mm.
When you get spat out, when you've done everything you can within your control, and actually everything that you're not in control of shows you that humility, which can have devastating effects. We all know of, and in our own way have experienced some of that. But do you think there have been learnings, and there are learnings from when the self-will is greater than our self-will in the wild? Do you think there are learnings for you or for all of us in those moments?
I think I had quite a pivotal moment some years ago where I was on a climbing trip in Jordan with my partner and a few friends, and we'd gone on a journey into this fairly remote canyon, and we were trying these new climbs there, and I'd only just started this long climb, and it was probably maybe 30 metres or something off the ground, and it's all kind of sandstone there, quite sort of friable sandstone rock, and suddenly, without any kind of warning really, pull this block of rock off. It just sheared off the face, so I fell and I fell quite a long way, and these rocks landed on me. It was all a bit messy really, but was incredibly lucky, as it turned out. Sort of over the next few days, we had to try and arrange to get me out of this canyon. It was all quite challenging, and I was definitely not in a great physical shape. But in the end, my friends managed to make contact with one of the local Bedouin tribesmen who could arrange a four-wheel drive to pick me up. Mm. And I remember on the way out, there's a famous sort of rock bridge near to where we were, and my friends, it had been a kind of aim of the trip to go and go to this rock bridge, and I certainly couldn't have done that. I was battered and bruised, really, but you know, we were literally going to drive past it, so I said, look, you know, no problem, you go and do that. And so the driver of the four-wheel drive stayed with me. My friends went scampering off up to this rock bridge, and he sort of called me over, signaled to me, and we went and sat under this little overlap of rock, and he cooked up a little sort of mint tea and so on and so on. And I remember sitting under this rock and drinking his tea, looking out on this beautiful view, and in many ways felt I'd felt very challenged, you know, by what had happened. But I remember just sitting under this rock bridge and this rocky outcrop, and just suddenly floods of tears and kind of all this emotion sort of flooded out. But then, you know, I was kind of aware I wasn't unhappy. Yeah. In fact, I was absolutely delighted. You know, it was kind of tears of absolute joy. Which took me a long time afterwards to kind of work out, really, that whole experience. And I actually stopped climbing for quite a few months after that, partly while I recovered, but partly just because of the mental side of it. But I sort of realised in that moment that whether I was inevitably happy just to survive the fall, but it was more just I realised that, you know, it wasn't about always pushing myself in these physical places, it was about being in these places. And I think it was really where everything else had got stripped away, and suddenly, you know, I just had this incredible contentment. This Bedouin tribesman were looking at me as like, what on earth's happened here? But I literally just couldn't stop myself, you know, for quite a while. And and my friends got back to me eventually, and it's something I still remember vividly. It was probably like 15 years ago, but you know, I remember that moment with massive significance. And so I think possibly it showed me that that the wild can just create these opportunities of healing, even in times where you've been through something that is right on the edge of,
yeah,
you know, mentally and physically.
Yeah, I think yeah, what came clear was that idea of, it took time to process, but actually you were totally present, and the message was about being as much as doing, right? Yeah, like actually being in that environment. And you had no idea at the time what the feeling was, or might have thought that it was just pure relief at surviving, and actually, but taking the time to think about it afterwards is actually this understanding of being. And being conscious of that. I think that's a pretty powerful lesson and story.
Yeah, because we are human beings, aren't we? And actually, we in our modern world, we live lives of lot of distraction. You're talking about you're in the urban context of the structures and the systems and the so-called civilization, the separation from nature and the world, and you found your moment, thankfully. Many people don't. Some people are fortunate too. You did. You found your moment where you found the world, and were able to, and it kind of made you come alive. You also have realised that actually, the joy and contentment you felt was not, though clearly there's benefits from the challenges, but you had that great moment of contentment in the being.
Yeah.
With the union, the connection with nature as it is around you, and how we're like the interconnection that you had at that moment. Yeah, it's very powerful. And you know, I loved hearing that story. And again, I'm always thinking, I wonder, okay, that human moment you had and your own journey with the wild, I'm thinking about right now, you know, you're with all of that experience and understanding, I wonder what your passions are now and what drive you forward.
Well, if I can just share with you just a slight sort of, I'll come to that, but one of the interesting aspects, so I went home from Jordan, in fact, and that was at Easter, and I was due to be out in the Alps with a friend in the summer, and we went to my wife and my friend's partner came out too, and they were just staying in the base, and we had these quite challenging objectives to do on these big faces in the Alps, and we went to the first one, and it was a route that was going to take us a couple of days, and literally kind of went in, and all the time on this journey, and I was quite unsettled, I was aware in my own head anyway, and we started up this face and literally got maybe, you know, a few hundred meters or something up this big face there in the Alps, and I just turned to my friend Phil and said, you know, I need to go down, and and he was very good about that, and we abseiled down and went and again I went back to the campsite where we were staying, and I just sort of kind of hung up my climbing ropes for that trip and went in, but we had some time, so with my wife we just went and you know, did some walking in the local area and went up into the mountains walking that way, and it sort of showed me that I clearly hadn't got over the incident from Easter. By the time I went out in the summer, it was probably far too soon, but again it just kind of went back to that message for me, which is did I still need those big challenges, or was it as much about being in those places? And that time I remember again, where I was just walking and we had some lovely sort of mountain walks, was absolutely joyous time for me, you know, just. And so I came back from that, and I guess it was a turning point for me where, you know, certainly did get back to doing sort of bigger, more challenging things, but I got a better balance, I think, maybe in those earlier times I was avoiding the other opportunities that the wild places offered. I was maybe focused more on the so I think there's always been that thing that sat side by side for me, but in later years. And so just to go back to your question really, which is definitely when I started climbing myself, and then I went on to qualify as a teacher, and I went and started teaching for a few years, teaching primary school children, and during that time, so I'd obviously been climbing a long time already then, but I started taking groups of children out climbing, and we just did this little kind of evening sessions at local climbing, little crags and things, and you know, there were children there who I could see, you know, they were gaining so much from that opportunity. They weren't excelling in the normal classroom environment, but you took them to a crag and they suddenly became, they excelled really. Mm. And so it showed me that we all take different things from different situations. And then, you know, once they were excelling at climbing, they were actually starting to improve with their schoolwork and so on and so on. So this kind of whole circle developed really. So I guess it led me into, to answer your question, perhaps, you know, that, From that point, I guess I was an educator, but I quite soon after sort of gave up teaching and moved more into outdoor education, and then in more recent years, that's still a big part of what I do, but again, more environmental education. So I suppose if I could define what I see my sort of purpose as, really, it's definitely about trying to educate other people, both about the problems that we face, you know, in our interactions with the wild, but also by engaging people. I'm a massive believer that we can help people in other aspects of their life, but also help them to have an understanding of why it's so important that we protect what we've got. So really, I would describe, you know, I would say education is what it's all about for me, really. It has been for a long time, but I suppose I'm more aware of that in recent years. So if that's one thing I can offer, you know, that's okay.
And you mentioned before we went back to grasp the Jordan story, that the growing sense of disconnect that you feel between people and the environment, or people in nature, or people in the wild, however we want to frame it, and that you witness that, and that you, is that something you believe we need to change, and if so, how?
I mean, it's that classic David Attenborough quote, isn't it, where, you know, people, if they've not I can't remember the quote exactly, but basically it's along the lines of, people aren't going to protect what they're not familiar with, really. It's that, isn't it? And so we see that all the time, and living in this area, I see that all the time as well. You know, people, a lot of people come and are incredibly respectful of the environment and do everything to protect it, a small proportion don't. But rather than see that as, it is obviously a negative thing, but I very much believe that there's people that aren't protecting it simply because they don't understand about the need to protect it. So if anything, I see those situations as a great opportunity where we can help other people to understand better, and even anything that we can do that, they're more likely to look after. So I guess that's the thing for me, is which is about really just trying to be that positive role model, but also actively be trying to encourage other people to learn more and to interact more, and consequently, you know, to protect better.
And you do that as part of your, like, I know that you organise, you know, annually, not last year, but annually you organise, you know, an action, which is, you know, a large action, a big gathering of people to do a litter pick in, you know, in the Peak District. I'm guessing, though, that this environmental activism and commitment to this education, that flows through all of your company's navigation courses, climbing courses, mountaineering expeditions, right?
Yeah, definitely. The litter pick's a good thing, really, and we've been running those for maybe 6 years, and we've got some this year as well now. But the key thing about that is, you know, we've had groups like 150 or close to 150 people on our sort of larger annual events. But, you know, and yeah, definitely in the course of a half a day, they'll collect hundreds of kilos of litter if we pick the areas that they go to. But again, that's always been about just as a way to educate people better. You know, we're making a small difference in physical terms, but if we can then share that message through social media, through channels, then, you know, everybody seeing that hopefully will start to see that as a problem that needs to be addressed. And so that message can go through to everything we do, really, whether it's choosing sensitively about where we park, about, you know, we offer, you know, just little examples, like we offer discounts for people coming into the area by public transport. You know, we've tried to look at every aspect of our kind of business operations and look at how we can get that message across to people. But usually, you know, trying to do it just through practical and kind of positive ways, really. We're not trying to preach to people. We're just saying, you know, here's a problem. How can we all kind of help to solve that problem, really?
Yeah.
And the current, you know, the sort of lockdown time has been a great opportunity for that. We've looked at kind of all aspects of our operation and just tried to, from everything, like, you know, to whether it's reducing our use of paper in printed documents, you know, through to looking at our transport, looking at other ways that we can help to get more people on board, really, not just through the environmental initiatives, but the more people we can get on courses, in my mind, that's everybody, you're helping them just to form those links with the wild, aren't you?
And,
everyone's an opportunity, I guess, is the answer.
I love that. I think that is a magical place to wrap it up. Everyone is an opportunity. If there was ever a message of hope and optimism, that's it. Thanks so much for your time and talking with us today, Paul. Really loved it.
Right, yeah, no, it's been an absolute pleasure. I've loved it too, guys. I could talk a lot longer. but it's been a great opportunity. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Paul. And it's really special again, isn't it, Josh, because we're actually with you in person in Dave the Van, and we're in this special wild place that you live in called the Peak District. So it's been really special hearing your take on how you understand the wild and your experience in the wild and the things that you've learned from that. You shared a really special moment of a realization of the power of just being and connecting with the landscape, and it's not always about doing, although the doing and the challenge may also be important to kind of test yourself, you know, in terms of what your capabilities are, maybe surprising yourself. And as you said, working with young people, which is your passion, and educating people, you can see just by being out in the world and engaging with the wild, being in the wild, connecting and doing stuff, it not only is good for people and how they are able to care and in a symbiotic way with the wild, but it helps them with the rest of their life when they they're always part of nature, of course, but when they go back to the urban environment and they go back to work or school, there's a symbiotic relationship there that seems to help people. We hope you've enjoyed listening to our conversation today with Paul. And we really hope that you'll get something out of this and you'll join us in the future.
In the meantime,
be true, live wild.
You've been listening to The Living Project with Josh Bulpin and Cormac Davey.
Enjoyed it? Please subscribe, follow, rate, and share with everyone you know. See you next time.
Be true, live wild.